Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Change Your Mind podcast, where we explore personal development, spirituality, and science. I'm your host, Chris Ashley, and I am so excited. My guest today is an intimacy and relationship expert. So we are going to get into all the juicy stuff today. I can't wait. First, couple quick announcements. Head over to the links in the show notes. You are going to find a lot. You're going to find links from my lovely guest. You are going to find a link to my book, Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality. It was endorsed by Michael Beckwith, Bob Doyle, Marcy Shimoff, all of whom were on The Secret. Also endorsed by John Gray, who wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. So go check it out. You will also find links to my free live masterclass, to some freebie downloads, to coursing programs. Lots going on there. And did I say coursing? I meant coaching programs. And as always, this podcast is part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network. We are doing a lot in the personal development space. I just hopped off a panel for a live event. So please just come check us out. A lot going on. Hi, I'm Chris. When I was younger, I went through trauma that caused me to feel broken and lost. But my life changed after I had a spiritual awakening. Since then, I've dedicated my life to studying and learning from masters all around the world that have helped me to create a life of fulfillment and abundance beyond my wildest dreams. Now I'm dedicated to sharing everything I've learned so that you don't have to suffer for decades like I did. I've seen people's lives completely transform, and I share it all right here. All right. So with me today, I have Alana Pratt. So Alana Pratt is a global media personality and go-to authority for those ready to heal heartbreak, live unapologetically, and attract a soul-shaking relationship. This Ivy League grad is the author of 6 books, has interviewed Whoopi Goldberg and Alanis Morissette, and hosts the edgy podcast Intimate Conversations. A certified master coach with over 5.6 million viewers on YouTube, Alana was asked by Lisa Gibbons to coach her during Dancing with the Stars. She's been interviewed over 800 times. And for the past 20 years, Alana's brave willingness to heal her own heart makes her authentic, relatable, and credible in her proven coaching programs and intimacy retreats. She's a small-town Canadian girl who is honored to love the shit out of humanity. I love that line. Welcome, Alana. I'm so happy you're here.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here. And you live in LA, yes? I used to live there for 20 years.
Very cool. I'm actually in the Bay Area. Oh, I'm just part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network.
Understood.
But I'll be down. I'm down there often because we have a lot of events.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Good. Yeah, I live in North Carolina now, but I spent 20 years raising my son in LA. So awesome. Awesome.
Nice. Do you miss the weather at all?
No. I mean, yes and no. It's beautiful weather. It's a little on the humid side in the Southeast, but I travel a lot and I go back to LA from time to time. I think what I don't miss is the traffic. And there's something about Southern charm that I never knew existed, which I quite enjoy. And I think, I don't know about you with your work, but sometimes we go where we're needed. Like if there's too much light, too much help in one area, sometimes I'm drawn to go live or work in another area where there isn't maybe the personal growth that we get so used to in California. So I'm shining my light on the other side of the continent.
I love that. Like I've heard people say like, oh, why can't all these light workers and healers be in one spot? And it's like, no, we're positioned around the globe, right? And we're like forming this grid around the earth almost, right?
Yeah. Oh, I got shivers when you said that. That's exactly what we're doing. Yeah. It's energetic and it's real. So thanks for getting that right out of the gate. I love it.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. So I always start my shows the exact same way. And that is by asking my guest, what is their origin story? So I would love for you to share what prompted you to even be an intimacy and relationship coach. Like, what was that journey like for you?
That's about a 3-hour conversation and get a bottle of wine, but I'll do my best.
Perfect.
I'll do my best to be quick. So as you heard, I'm a small town Canadian girl. So British Columbia. And I didn't want to be a pharmacist and take over Pratt's Pharmacy, the little drugstore with the big heart. I didn't want to be a teacher like my mom, although I am a form of a teacher. I didn't like the box in which she wasn't paid very well. And I wanted to be really valued for what it is I offered and have no ceiling on how I could teach. I also didn't want to be a therapist and pretend like if I met you in the grocery store that I didn't know you. Mm. I love my clients. They're my family. So I found my way on Uncle Phil's 18-wheeler semi from Vancouver, British Columbia, down to Los Angeles when I was 19. And I was going to be a dancer. I quit college. Parents were pissed off. And I was good enough, talented enough, brave enough, but I didn't have a working visa. So I, with $40 left to my name, I got a job dancing in Japan. So I moved all the way over to Tokyo, and I was a dancer and a model and a spokesperson. And I ended up spending 4 years there, making more money than my parents combined and doing really, really well, backpacking all over Asia. And this is where I first moved into intimacy. I didn't call myself an intimacy expert right out of the gate. But what I found, I was in a show, and Chris, I was dancing with these girls from the Moulin Rouge, and they thought their bodies were temples, divine temples. And I was very concerned about what you thought about my body, competition with women, did men think I was hot? It was very much in my head. And I did not see myself as beauty itself. I was either beautiful or not as beautiful as her. It was very competitive, very insecure. And these women were completely different. They were radiant. And so I remember going to Thailand for a vacation in between contracts. And I walked up and down this beach on Koh Phangan. It's where all the full moon rave parties were. But by day, I was committed, Chris, to walk up and down until I no longer cared what people thought and I could just be present. And it took days. I sobbed. I was so insecure. I just could not get out of my head comparing myself to others and quite frankly, be afraid of men's attention. And it was on this last turn back where I just said, oh, just screw it. I guess I'm going to be insecure forever. Where I had one of my first direct experiences where the ground fell away, the gravity fell away. I was one with the sand and the water and the mist of the ocean in the breeze. And every single person I looked at looked like a bodhisattva. Like there was just oneness with the earth and people. And then my body, I was one with my body and I felt like beauty herself. And of course it didn't last. A direct experience with our true nature is like a flash of enlightenment. But I'm like, okay, I'm on to something here. There is a path to oneness with body, mind, and spirit. So much of my spiritual journey has just been about spirit, like leave the body, go have unity, consciousness, and oneness. But we're humans on a planet. How do we live that in our body, in interaction with our sisters and our brothers and our lovers and our kids? So that was back when I was like in my early 20s. Many, many things in between then and now. Couple ex-husbands, custody battle, criminal assault boyfriend, a lot of crazy shit went down over the decades after, but I kept being on the path personally of why was I attracting emotionally unavailable partners, abusive partners? What was going on? Because I'm smart. I'm an Ivy League grad of cum laude university, Columbia University. So it wasn't my lack of brains, and it certainly wasn't my lack of intention or my beautiful heart, but I kept attracting relationships that didn't work, but I had a skill set to help others. I could see their blind spots. But as we all know, we can't see our own blind spot. And it was only after that last relationship where it ended in criminal assault and he pleaded guilty, where I'm like, okay, we need to figure this out. And what I discovered is that if we can imagine an iceberg, the tip of the iceberg, that would be our conscious mind, our beliefs, our thoughts, our stories. It's what we're aware of. But 92, 95% is subconscious, the iceberg under the water. And that is a frequency sending out 24/7 what's going on in there. And I had level 4 hypervigilant trauma from being molested as a kid growing up. And all my body and my frequency was nonstop 24/7 going, where's the abuser to survive? Where's the abuser to survive? It didn't understand past, present, and future. It didn't have a better point of view. It was just mayday, mayday all the time. I had no clue until I began a certain type of protocol with plant medicine, psychedelic somatic integration. So it's not plant medicine that I did 25 years ago, like ayahuasca, which was great, or psilocybin, which was great. Like I know that I'm one with all and that you are me and I am you and we are one. Like I know that, but it still didn't do any good to change my behaviors relationship-wise. And it wasn't just romantic. It was also professional, financial decisions. It was across the board. And when I started this protocol, which you stay in tier one in the body, you're not drunk, you're not stoned, you're not checking out, you're talking with your facilitator. It's one-on-one, it's not a group journey. And my facilitator helped me stay in my body from leaving level 4 trauma all the way through level 3, two, one, and zero. And in that journey home, that's when the memories all came back. The smells came back. The sensations came back. The words came back. It was terrifying to discover what had happened. But it was also freeing, Chris, because I'm like, oh, that's why I can't seem to get it together with men romantically or professionally. And I was able to heal that trauma and stop that behavior that was running the show subconsciously. I had forgiveness for myself, and I became even more relatable to my clients, who are very successful people with the best of intentions. They do all the work and they're spiritual, the whole thing, but they still can't quite get it right in their relationships. It's subconscious. It's not conscious. And when we can align our subconscious and our conscious together in wholeness and in oneness, addictions end, sabotaging patterns end, marriages thrive. And it's been tremendously freeing for me and very fulfilling to watch my clients literally transform their lives.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. You like lit up at the end when you were talking about how freeing it has been for you. Yeah. And wow, what a journey. I literally got goosebumps when you were talking about that moment of enlightenment on the beach. And, you know, I have so many questions. You know, I want to ask the deeper questions, but first I have to ask about this plant medicine journey. Like, what is it exactly? What was it that you were taking? And what is the process called?
The psychedelic somatic integration. So okay. Tier one is the body. Mm-hmm. Tier two is the identity and personality we create to survive the trauma of tier one held in the body. And tier three is leaving the body. It's oneness with God and universal consciousness and unity consciousness. So plant medicines such as ayahuasca, psilocybin are great to leave the body. Ketamine is also disassociative, but cannabis is an incredible legal plant to stay in the body. If you don't tell cannabis where to go and you use it to check out, she'll check you out, and you'll avoid all your issues, but you can use it to check in if you tell her this is what we're doing with the journey. And it's a hybrid, indica sativa hybrid. And so you're relaxed, but also aware, and it's extraordinary. The results that you get using a very recreational or legal medicine to keep us in our body and bring us home. And so there's a lot of MAPS, M-A-P-S, MAPS trials with MDMA, MAPS trials with cannabis, MAPS trials with ketamine, some of these substances that have been phenomenal in helping literally eliminate PTSD from vets, from war. And we don't need to go to war to have something happen when we're growing up. That was just too big to process in the moment. And we left. And that was smart. We survived. Yeah. But in order to heal it, we need to go back into the body with a facilitator who's there with you through the really scary panic, terror, rage, and then all the self-hatred. What's wrong with me that we've been saying for decade after decade when we just can't get it right? There's always a tremendous amount of self-hatred in there as well. But the homecoming, it sort of feels like the oneness you have when you go out to tier three, you get to feel that in your body, this wholeness, peace in your skin, no matter what's going on. I mean, I still obviously have emotions. I'm sad and mad, but I'm not triggered sad or triggered mad. I don't leave my body. I can stay in my body, have an emotion, stay present, and come back to zero. And I've never been able to do that. I was the girl that would run out of the house and freak out or blame. I just could literally be with certain situations that would happen that would trigger me to the best of my ability. I just couldn't. I wasn't weak, wasn't having a bad attitude. I literally, my autonomic nervous system wouldn't allow me to stay in my body, but now it can.
That's amazing. And I relate to a lot of what you're saying so much. My listeners know I was also abused when I was a child, and that's what led to my spiritual awakening is, yeah. You know, that's why I ask people's origin stories on this podcast, because everyone has different versions of the same story, right? They went through a really difficult time. They found their way out of it. And now they're using what they learned to help others so that others don't take decades to heal like they did, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's so inspirational every time someone shares their story, and yours is as well. Okay. So I really like what you're talking about. Like most of our conscious mind is the tip of this iceberg, right? And there's just this depth underneath, and that's what's driving us subconsciously. So how does someone, and I know you were just talking about the plants, but like, how does someone even start to figure out that that's what's causing turmoil in their relationship or causing them to choose the wrong person? Like, how do they get down to that point?
First would be awareness. Yeah. When you have the best of intentions, you're alert, you have a coach, your friends are giving you feedback, you're doing everything right, and you're still getting the same pattern of cheaters or abusers or emotionally unavailable or always blaming you for things or never taking ownership of their side of the street, whatever the pattern is, and you're the only one in common. The first step would be awareness. Then the second step would be, don't judge yourself when you find out, oh, I'm the one in common. And I was the one in common with all the story that I told you. So awareness, don't judge yourself. And then curiosity. If these are the results, what might be the source, the cause of that effect? And then get with a practitioner who can support you in diving deep. So many of my clients are very clever people, very successful people, and they want to figure it out. They want to understand. It doesn't do any good. Those are harder people to work with, because we'll be in the body feeling an emotion, feeling a body sensation, and they'll kind of go, well, I got to figure it out. That doesn't make any sense. I'm like, just be quiet and just get back into the body. Unfortunately, we don't have a legality around MDMA in America, but it is over in Australia. And I was just there in July, doing these journeys with three women over there. And that's another beautiful medicine that softens the mind, helps us stay in the heart more, helps us feel more. So these medicines used in very low dose, I don't want to give them a fish. I want to teach them to fish. I want to teach them how to listen. I want to teach them how to feel. I want to teach them how to stay with the emotion. And here's the big thing, which I understood on some level because I'm a dancer. Trust the body. If the mind could have brought us back to zero, we'd all be back at zero. We'd all be fine. It's actually surrendering the mind, letting go of the mind, letting go of figuring it out, even letting go of trying to get home. Just let go of control and just let the body come back. Our bodies are phenomenal. They're literally wired to bring us back from level four all the way to zero, all on their own, if we get out of the way. But getting out of the way means we have to feel like level three, for example, Chris, hopeless. What's the point? What's wrong with me? Suicidal ideations. It's not pretty. Who wants to feel that? So then people disassociate again. Let's go on social media. Where's my second glass of wine? Let me just work another 10 hours, right? Because coming back into the body doesn't feel good at first. And then level two, trauma, is very intense, very short, 30 seconds, 60 seconds, but it's panic. Like, you think you're going to die. Or it's rage. I think I'm going to kill somebody. Or it's self-hatred. I want to do myself in. It's not fun. But again, when you have a facilitator, I got you. Take me with you. I'm right here. And sometimes even on journeys, people will project onto me the perpetrator that wounded them in the first place. I become their mom. I become their dad. I become the rapist. And if I would get triggered by that, I couldn't hold space. I couldn't facilitate. So I've got to walk my talk and have done my over 30 journeys myself so that when any of this happens, I'm not going anywhere. I don't get triggered and I can play good cop, bad cop. But here's one of the most beautiful things I get to do is I get to reparent them. So many of us had well-intending parents, or sometimes not, but we never heard, and I mean in our central nervous system, our autonomic nervous system and into our brain, we never had heard, oh, I've always wanted you and now you're here. You're everything. You matter so much. I intended, I prayed, and you're here. You're the most important thing to me in the whole world. Like, these words I get to say to them, I get to hold their hand in a way where maybe they were abandoned or left alone. I get to literally, in that neuroplasticity, which happens when you use plant medicine for about 2 weeks, it's this opening, a dissolving of the cellular matrix, so that we can literally rewire our brains. This only happens when we're a kid and an adolescent, then we're done. But the gift of plant medicine used this way, with guidance of a facilitator, we get to literally rewire our secure attachment to ourself. So it's a huge responsibility of what I say and how I be to help them. But it's also so beautiful to see them soften and to feel, oh my God, I am enough. I'm actually enough. And then no matter what happened in your past, we can rewire it now so you can have a new lease on life and freedom no matter what.
That's so beautiful. And as the mother of a 7-month-old, I'm like thinking about these things all the time, right? Yeah. When you're talking about how like kids are literally like sponges, they're in theta brainwave and it's well-intentioned, but like you might say something different one day and they'll cling to it, right? And it's just, it's a lot of responsibility. So it's such a beautiful thing that you get to help people rewire that.
Yeah.
So you mentioned a couple weeks, like how long do you typically work with someone? And I know that there's this idea of like, you need to like feel those emotions to move through them. Like what does the healing journey usually look like?
Yeah. I don't take on clients for less than a year. Everybody comes into my program for a year. Not everybody does these psychedelic somatic integration journeys with me, but the ones who do, everybody regardless comes in for a year because I'm not interested in giving relief and then they crash. I'm interested in lasting change, teaching them to fish versus giving them a fish. What happens with these psychedelic somatic integration journeys, the journey itself is not the quick fix. It's what we get to integrate, excavate, and bring back to zero. Then the real work begins, the real integration begins. So we do private sessions, we do weekly group sessions, and we do an annual retreat. So you're in community, you're one-on-one with me, and we have these psychedelic somatic integration immersions. And what I find is this tier two, so we talked about tier one is the body where the subconscious trauma is held. When that's cleared away, the identity on top of it's like, who am I then? I don't have to be this way with guys, be this way with gals. I don't have to, is this the job I want? This isn't who I am. Where am I living? Like there's so many things where you get quite destabilized and disoriented. So you need a facilitator, you need a community where you're there for the year as you go from destabilized to stabilized, disoriented to oriented. And what arises, even though it's intense I think we'll just leave it at that, intense, you cry a lot, you learn how to feel and not leave your body. But then it's almost like Niagara Falls gets let loose, and then eventually it becomes a little stream. You're able to feel your feelings and they pass through with so much more ease. And you discover the real truth of who you are arises. And then something amazing happens. The truth of you through your body arises and it somehow touches that tier three oneness with unity. You start to literally hear the whispers of God. You know, we all know in our pineal gland, it's like an antenna. You know, HeartMath teaches us this, right? It goes out in coherence to the non-local field. You hear intelligence that you couldn't hear before. And it can go in and you can co-create with the divine in ways that I certainly couldn't before. So you feel I'm meant to be here. You have this sense of, well, that didn't work out. I wonder how that's for me. As opposed to that didn't work out, what's wrong with me? Yeah. Or what's wrong with you, God? Like you don't do that next stage. But I'll be honest, it takes work. It takes commitment. It takes a safe community and a very professional facilitator who's done this. Like I'm no better than my clients. I'm a few steps ahead, maybe more developed, but I'm no better. So they're very safe to go through this journey of a year. And many who have been maybe single or attracting duds, they by the end of their first year, they attract somebody. And then it's a whole new realm of issues that show up when you're actually on the court with them. So many clients sign up for another year. And now we navigate a relationship that's more healthy, transparent, vulnerable, intimate, real, and authentic than they've ever had, which is scary, but it's what they've always wanted. And then we just watch people pop, you know, in the group and it gives the new ones hope. And we celebrate, you know, you never gave up. You didn't give up 5 minutes before the miracle and look who you've attracted. This one client, she was sharing on a group call the other day. She goes, I am so happy. We're like, you are glowing. She goes, I just got a 180-point survey from my new boyfriend. I'm like, what kind of survey? What do you mean? She's like, all the different things we could do sexually. Is it a yes? Is it a no? Is it on the table, off the table? Is it,
wow.
can I look at this list? So these unexpected miracles start to show up because she's no longer trying to be somebody she's not. She's no longer attracting trauma bonding partners. She's with somebody where she can be herself, and so can he. And the freedom, it just ripples into the whole community. It's beautiful.
That is really beautiful. And I love that there's that supportive community cheering each other on. So, you know, we've all heard that kind of cliche term, like you have to love yourself first before you can love anyone else. Yeah. And it sounds more like what you're saying is you have to heal yourself first. You have to unlearn all of these things to get back to your true self before you can really love anyone else. So what, yes, false, true? Talk to me about that.
On my site, alanapratt.com, you'll see right there, become the one, find the one, awaken the one. Mm. And I was always, once I find him, then I'll be enough. Right. And then I need to keep him. And clearly that didn't work. So you're right. We do need to love ourselves first. But how? What is self-love? How do we do that? Everywhere we can see the image of little you, who's sad, mad, scared, ashamed, guilty, whatever they are. And here you are with a 2x4 trying to fix them and change them. Well, it's not going to go very well because you're judging them for being human. You're judging them for having an emotion that's uncomfortable. So to love oneself is to love without condition all aspects of self. So when we go into these healing journeys, whether it's a private coaching call, or whether it's a medicine journey, whether it's at a retreat, whether it's on a group call, and an emotion will arise, we've been trained, oh, let's just push that down. Boys don't cry. Let's keep it together. All the rest of it. I'm the opposite. A lot of therapy is like, oh, don't let them go into that. You know, there's a window of tolerance. And if they get a little too upset, let's bring them back down and give them some drugs or something. Mm-hmm. I'm the opposite. I'm like, where's the shadow? Like, let's go in. And so let's be with little you who's terrified and not fix her, change her, or try to make her feel any better. Can we be love without condition and be present and be in our body and feel? Because again, the body knows how to get back to zero. If we can just feel long enough, without trying to escape or change, and just, I'll make a joke sometimes, it's like a fart. You just sort of let the fart through, or like a gas pain. Just let it get through. It'll leave. It'll be fine. Just relax and breathe, and it'll pass. So same with these emotions. We think we're gonna die. We don't. It's uncomfortable. But then we don't just have fear turn into peace. We don't just have self-hatred turn into self-love. We don't just have, you know, terror, panic turn into peace, or rage, fury turn into calmness. We do. But it's not like we get rid of those bad things. There's an alchemy that happens because we can't create or destroy energy, right? So it has to only change. So literally we're alchemizing, is that a word? We're creating alchemy with these uncomfortable emotions, and they turn into superpowers that are embodied for the rest of your life. So when you go through one of these, it's a coaching call or a journey or what have you, we're going to be excavating some really uncomfortable things. We're going to feel them. But when we're done feeling them, they've literally transformed into a higher vibration. Like, you earned it. You became confidence. You became surrender. You became forgiveness. It's not a cognitive thought. It's an embodiment. It's a vibration. And no one and no thing and no circumstance can take that away from you. And so over a year, when there's all these different emotions that we begin integrating, you feel not happy because of the circumstances. You feel joyful for no reason. You don't feel strong. I got through it. Aren't I good enough? No, you just feel like courage itself. Like, bring it, life, what you got. I'll always get back up again. And if I fall down, I won't judge myself anymore. I will get down in the gutter and I will say, hey, that was tough. And we'll have compassion with self. And then we'll get up. We don't have to ever judge ourselves again.
Yeah, and I love that description, because that's what it's like to be healed, right? Mm-hmm. And so many people don't understand that, right? It's you have a choice at that point, right? You can choose to be joyful today. Right? You can choose to feel whatever it is you want to feel at that point. You're not led by your emotions because you're so triggered, right? Like you said, you're embodying it. So Another thing that you apparently talk about that I really want to ask you about is you're all about conscious relationships. And you even said like you work with people, you know, for the second year, once they've manifested that perfect person, it happens. So talk to me about conscious relationships. Like how does someone behave and how are they being in a conscious relationship? Mm.
So I would say unconscious is when you're not in your body, you blame others, you blame life, you blame yourself. You're spinning in your head, coming up with excuses. You're letting fear run the show. I would say conscious is not like you don't have fear anymore, but you're aware of the fear. You're not going to judge other or self. You're going to sit in the fire. You're going to integrate it into more courage and bravery as you engage in life. So that would be like a conscious way of engaging with an emotion. So then we bring that into a relationship and our partner does something annoying. You, because you can be with your own emotions, sit with them. They do something that triggers you or annoys you and you don't make them wrong. You don't leave or abort. You don't try to fix or change them. You don't make them the source of your safety nor the source of your demise, right? You're two sovereign whole beings, each doing your own work. And I didn't do that for my first two marriages. They were the source of my worth and safety. And so I tried to be a people pleaser so they wouldn't leave, or I tried to change them and fix them so they could be what I thought I needed because they completed me. So that didn't work. So now that I've chosen, and with my clients, we choose to take full ownership of our own self, be conscious ourself, be whole ourself. It's now this conscious relationship, you could call it, instead of a soulmate, maybe like a whole mate. That's a way Dr. Mark Gaffney and Dr. Barbara Marks Hubbard before she passed would speak of. And I love this because what happens when it's two whole people together, not perfect, because we never get there. I think we're always doing the work. But two whole people who take full ownership and do the work and grow, it's not 1 + 1 = 2. It's 1 + 1 = infinity. Mm-hmm. Because this figure eight starts to happen. Back in the transactional soulmate, you complete me. It's like transactional back and forth. But in a whole mate or conscious relationship, it's this figure eight that goes back and forth. You literally, by who you're being and you're a stand for them and you love them and you're not going to fix or judge them or control them, you become this energy that awakens something in them that was asleep. That in the presence of this relationship, they become more. And then the same goes the other direction. And so it's 1 + 1 = infinity, not just for yourself and for each other and for your children, your beautiful 7-month-old, but for humanity. Like all of life gets better because we are in this conscious relationship. It's easy to be asleep and it's hard to be awake. So to be in a conscious relationship means you've got to own your shit all the time. You got to have your own women's group or your own men's group. You've got to have date night. You've got to do dyad practices, communication practices. You need to water the plant. You need to clip off the leaves that are dying. You need to be curious every morning and grateful and shower them with sunlight and sunshine of praise and appreciation. It takes more work, but 1 + 1 = infinity. That outcome, that result, I'm in because it's magic. It's gratitude that brings you to tears. It's, again, waking up for no reason and feeling fulfilled, peaceful and grateful. The couples that come to me, because I work with singles who tend to find the one after they become the one. But I also work with couples who want to change the one and that's not working. So they become the one which awakens the one. And I cannot tell you, it's probably about 25% of my business is couples and 75 singles who find the one. But these couples come and they might have been together for 25, 30 years. And they've never heard each other. Mm-hmm. They've talked at each other, but they've never actually heard each other. Because they're, again, remember that transactional, their safety is based on controlling the other person. So by helping them sit in the fire and integrate their own wounds and have some of these communication practices like dyads, for example, where all you get to say when asked a question in response is, thank you. You don't get to interrupt. You don't get to get into an argument. You say, tell me something you're afraid to tell me. Mm-hmm. Or tell me a way you want to be loved. Or tell me something that no matter what I've done, you still don't feel like I'm really sorry. And then the other person responds, but the person who asked the question, they only get to say thank you. They have to sit in the fire and go, whoa, if I'm going to take 100% ownership here for this relationship and each person does that, I need to up my communication skills. I need to be more present. I need to give more touch. I need to give more praise. I need to let that go. You know, whatever it is. And so couples wake up real quick in the container of this way of being in a conscious relationship. And it's wonderful to, some of them are on a brink of divorce. Choose drinking or the family, right? Choose to stop being a workaholic and be present with the kids or I'm done, like on the brink. And in a very short period of time, relatively, you know, 3-6 months, happier than ever, but not happy. Like that rich gratitude of, wow, we almost called it a day. And now we're together better than ever. And it's rippling into the kids. It's rippling into the community. And then when these singles on the calls watch the couples have these transformations, they're like, I want that. That's what I want. Yeah. And I say the same thing. I'm single, so I want that too. Together we rise.
That's so beautiful. And, you know, like I can't help but think of my own relationship with my husband as you're talking about this. And we've had those, maybe not like those exact questions, but we've had those moments where it's like, let's just sit down and talk and be like, you know, what are some ways that you want to be loved that I'm not loving you? Or what are some things you need that I'm not giving you? Because it's so easy to just get wrapped up in the day to day.
Yeah.
Right. Especially with a baby. It's like, and it's also easy to snap at each other when you're tired or whenever, you know, people just come home from work and it's just like, let's just get dinner going. And, you know, it's really carving that out. And I appreciate this reminder. You know, I'm grateful to be in a conscious relationship, but like you said, it's not like a one and done. It's like a continual, because we're all evolving too, right? Like needs evolve. Yeah. So, just such beautiful reminders.
Yeah. Thanks for reminding me. I have another couple. We just had an amazing coaching call. She hasn't done the psychedelic somatic integration journey because she's just gave birth and breastfeeding, but he did. And we had a follow-up coaching call and they're not having a lot of sex. The baby's less than 3 months old. They have another one, a 2-year-old. She's a breadwinner, but not working right now. They're not connecting. And what I heard, this is what's so beautiful when you're totally conscious, but you can't see your own blind spots. They're both coaches. They're both very highly evolved humans. But he needs sensual, sexual connection. She's exhausted. So she can't even think about it. And then he doesn't feel seen, believed in like the man. So he says he'll do something. Maybe he gets around to it. Maybe he doesn't. Right. So she doesn't feel like she can trust him. And you can just see the negative spirals going in both directions. So we got to the point where when he does something that she enjoys or he helps out, she'll say thank you, but she'll stop at gratitude. And I suggested that she moves into sensual gratitude, like spicy gratitude, more sexy gratitude. And she is terrified to do that because if she does that, her thought was, well, then now he's just going to want to have sex. I can't even stand up. I'm so tired. So I'm just going to dim my sensuality down into pure gratitude. But then to him, just being thankful is like, meh. And he doesn't have that. He really feeds off of her sensuality for work. So her conclusion was, if I be sexy saying thanks for washing the baby bottles, I'm going to have to bend over and he's going to do me. And I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But that was actually incorrect. And we spoke about it. He's like, no. I mean, yeah, I would. I'd love to do anytime. But no, if we could put in the books once a week, sex night, sensuality night, and I can look forward to that. I can use your sensuality to knock out that website, to get on the call with my next, you know, lead. I can be more enlivened by your sensuality. And she's like, really? She goes, I want to give you my sensuality. I feel good when it flows through my body. I just only have this much energy. So we created this boundary. We created this agreement. If you, then I. So if you, he said, would be willing to say thank you with, and I can't wait till Thursday because it's our sexy time. He's like, yeah. And he goes off and he gets more done. And then if he would say to her, what she needs every day is not just we got this because they both were equally contributing financially entrepreneurs. But now that there's the two kids, he's taking over the money right now. And it's terrifying her. It's making her feel guilty and scared. So she needs him to say, I got this. Not we got this. I got this. But then she's like, that's actually not enough either. I got this. And I need to know he did it. I need the result for me to actually calm down. I need to see a checklist. And so we were totally naughty. And I'm like, okay, got this. So if you would do what you say you're going to do, the bookend, I got this, and then read the checklist, you're probably going to get a lot of blowjobs. I'm just saying right now. And they both like totally laugh. She's like, yeah, if you would give me a 7-point presentation of everything you did, drop your pants, I'm in. Oh, they were laughing. But the playfulness was back because they were each able to ask for what they wanted with more support from me to get really to the core of exactly where the fear was of going all the way to give, all the way to receive. And now we got that figure eight that I was talking about before. Before, it was very polite transactional gratitude. There's nothing wrong with that, but it wasn't feeding either of them and they weren't in the flow together. But by being willing to bring in this sacred intimacy, verbally, physically, energetically, taking actual steps, all the things, they were right back on the same page again. And it was beautiful.
I love that story so much. And it was making me think that, you know, oftentimes we will get frustrated, we meaning everyone, we'll get frustrated because we want something from our partner, but we don't take the time to really drill down. Like, that's why a coach is so great, like an expert like you, right? We don't take the time to drill down, like, what is it that I actually need to see? Instead, we get defensive or we snap or we get bossy or we nag because we feel like our needs aren't getting met, right? And so the other person reacts and then it's happening with them too. But it would just be so much easier if we could just be like, this is what I need. But sometimes we don't even realize it enough to verbalize it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when we're, and that's another thing about being in our body or disassociating, when it's just too much overwhelm, we do this little respite thing and we go out of our body and we disassociate just to like try to keep it together. And we look calm, but we're really kind of checked out. We're numb. So to come back in the body and to feel our feelings, which will direct what we actually need, is scary. It's hard. It's depressing. It's suicidal. It's infuriating. It's panic. It's all these things. It's self-hatred. It's all, I'll just leave again. But then we never get in touch with what we really desire. So that's part one. Part two, I don't know how you were raised, but like, I can do it myself. Like, you know, I want to be this, I can do it all on my own, and boys don't cry, and women are badass bitch bosses. And like, asking for help is scary. A lot of people have it wired that that's a sign of weakness or failure, when in fact, 1 + 1 = infinity, right? So we're actually more when we support one another. So there's many layers to slowing down, feeling into our needs, and then asking for them. And then the last step would be receiving them. Do we feel worthy of support? Do we feel worthy of someone having our back? Do we feel worthy of saying, I don't have the energy, thank you. Thank you for helping me. And not shaming ourselves, blaming ourselves, feeling inadequate, and not even receiving this beautiful gift that we just had the courage to ask for, but we can't even let it in. So for this last couple we were speaking of, so much of her worth has been about being such a successful businesswoman. And he's going to pay off her credit card. She was having trouble receiving that because her worth was her accomplishments. Mm-hmm. So that's another piece about this whole cycle. Is your worth and your accomplishments collapsed? Or can we uncollapse them? Our worth is our worth. I am that I am. End of story. My accomplishments, they come and go. The size of my ass comes and goes. The size of my bank account comes and goes, right? These are things that change. And I love all that I've accomplished. But when I'm really getting down on myself, I have to wonder, have I collapsed them again? Am I only going to be happy when I get the outcome? Or am I willing to be enough fulfilled today on every single step of the journey and not wait till the end or wait till I get what I want to be whole? That's actually the last relationship I was in, Chris, was the biggest homecoming for me in terms of finally not needing him to be a certain way for me to be whole. And it was painful, but it was very helpful. There was, he's a very driven man, always go, 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 not so present. And he forgot that the Christmas present he got me, tickets to go see Alanis Morissette, he's in a band, And so his band got offered a gig the same day. So he sold the tickets and he didn't tell me. And it hurt. And before all the integration work that I'd done, I would have blamed and stormed off, gone to the beach, cried my face off, done something like that. But I'm practicing. I sat there right when he told me that. And I just kind of outwardly expressed what I was going through in the moment, devastated. And he looked at me and I just closed my eyes, devastated. And I felt for a good 90 seconds devastated. And I let my body on its own go to the next place, hopeless. I'm not important. I'm not valued. And I let him watch me feel through all of this. And then I let my body go to the next place. And it was that, like that relief place. I'm like, you forgot. I forgive you. And that took probably about 4 to 5 minutes to actually watch me go through all of that in real time. And normally when he had done things similarly in the past, I would have reacted stormed off. But this was different. And the look on his face was unlike anything I'd ever seen. He actually had remorse. Before, all he had was justification and blame and defensiveness and excuses. But this time he owned it and he said, I'm so sorry. I am so embarrassed that I forgot that that's what I got you for Christmas. Please forgive me. In the end, that was still an overall trend in the relationship. So the relationship didn't make it, but it didn't end in that blame thing. I felt proud of the evolution of my own consciousness within that relationship to not have his behavior determine my wholeness. My wholeness is my responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like such a amazing moment that you came so far, right? And I it seems like he wasn't defensive in that moment because you weren't blaming him.
Correct.
Totally. Right?
100%.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's like we can only be responsible for our own reactions, not someone else's. Right. But if we react true to ourselves and communicate effectively and even like listen with empathy, then that other person isn't going to get so triggered either.
Totally. It's good for all.
Yeah.
And that's why I say 1 + 1 = infinity. What does that really mean? It means we actually both grow into better people together for ourselves and for the world. That's what a conscious relationship is.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. It's like you're side by side as a team, which is how it should be. So I wanted to ask something. You were talking about feeling worthy of accepting that gift. And you were talking about your client whose husband was going to pay off her credit card. And I was just thinking in the moment, like, if that was me, would I be feeling unworthy? And I was like, I would be feeling guilty, right? Because it's like, if that was my sense of worth, like my career and bringing that to the table, and then I had to kind of forgo that because of, you know, my current circumstances, I would feel guilt. And it made me wonder, like, when we feel guilt, is it really unworthiness? And guilt is kind of that top layer, that top emotion. And I'm just curious what your thought is.
Yeah, it's a really great insight. Guilt is self-punishment. That's the way I see it. So who would punish oneself? Someone who hates themselves, criticizes themselves, loathes themselves. In all of my coaching journeys, there comes a time when we finally face how much we hate each other, hate ourselves, sorry. And normally we just blame each other. But we can really get real with what's under the guilt, what's under the self-punishment. What is the presupposition of needing to punish ourselves? I must be wrong. I must be bad. I hate myself. If I was only different, everything would be different. And when not to fix it, but to sit in it. And when clients, including myself, have sat in this self-loathing, if only then, right? That dynamic. When you really sit in it long enough and you can just be with, I did my best. I did my best. I remember this other, I did a psychedelic somatic. I did 4 in a row actually just last month. And the last lady, very successful woman, still hadn't forgiven herself, loved to hate herself. And we finally got at the very, very end, I did my best. And she started sobbing, but she had to feel through how much she hadn't forgiven herself, all that her daughters had to go through, all the carnage of her decisions. And she finally got to, I did my best. And then everything just gets very quiet. and we no longer need to have the feelings of guilt just don't really live there anymore. Their foundation got dissolved and they dissolve. And so shame and guilt are very interlinked. Shame is I'm bad. Guilt is, you know, I did something bad. So when we're no longer bad, the guilt has nothing to rest upon. And we can simply be humbled for damn sure. Definitely humbled. I think I'm more humbled than ever, and more gracious to receive things, and more quick to apologize, more quick to own my things, because there's nothing to get defensive about because I've already forgiven myself. I'm already home inside of myself. Before that, just the slightest bit of you even looking at me weird, I would start to justify and get a bit of an edge up or plead and prove my case. I don't need to do that. I mean, I'm not perfect, but I don't do that much anymore. I can actually get into the other person's world and go, wow, from your point of view, I can totally see how you feel that way. I'm so sorry. I never was able to do that before. And then they feel so seen. And then they're able to go, oh, well, actually, it was just made me feel triggered. It made me feel not enough. And it, we just get into this vulnerable, intimate moment of truth. And it's exquisite. And it brings people closer. It's how you resolve conflict into an even closer relationship.
Wow. That's incredible. That's so powerful. And that's a place that I'm like striving to get to right now. So, you know, it's very admirable. And I'm sorry to like go back to this guilt thing, but I'm like really fascinated by it. And I just, with everything you said, you know, like there are people who I know who just have this stream of consciousness that's negative and self-hatred, right? That's their self-talk. But there's also people who have really positive self-talk and are really self-confident and feel they love themselves consciously, who also feel guilt. So is that like, do they have the self-hatred underneath too? And it's just like, they've done the work partially, or it's just buried deeper, or like, what is that?
I'd have to talk to them about what they were guilty about, I think, to get to see whether it was actually subconscious and unintegrated trauma or triggers, or healthy guilt, I guess we could call it, is when you were not conscious for a moment, because nobody's totally perfect, and you did something without thinking, and you feel a sense of remorse or regret. Like healthy regret or healthy remorse could be verbalized as guilt. And that's actually good because it will inspire you to be more present next time. It'll inspire you to own where you messed up. It'll inspire you to clean up your mess. So it could be a healthy way for you to be humble and own your mistake. Or on the other hand, like you were saying before, it could be, as we said, the conscious mind is quite small. It could be an indication that, oh, there's actually some subconscious work to do in there. And let's go have a look. Even though when I go into working with somebody for a year, we know where they are and where they want to get to. And that's our intention. How we're going to get there, shit if I know. And when we go into all of this subconscious work, we reveal things that I don't know. I might have an intuition around it, but it's subconscious to them and subconscious to me. I don't know. But as we go in, we're like, oh, and we put the pieces together. All the puzzle pieces start to fall into place. And now it all makes sense that this is how you were raised and this is what you chose. And then that's when the kind of the click happens, or the big aha and the transformation happen, is when our spinning mind doesn't have to go, why at 3 a.m. in the morning? Why did I do that? Why didn't I? Why? When the why can get quiet and it all makes sense because we've integrated what's actually running the show. And that's when the self-forgiveness comes in. That's where the allowance of all. And even that's when, oh, the universe was not against me. The universe was always guiding me. Oh, thanks, universe. Wow, you really have my back. Like you have a sense of peace in your skin and safety on the planet when it all makes not sense up here. It's almost like this aligned. When everything's aligned, you're like, okay. Because I don't know about you, but some things that have gone down, I was like, God, hate you. How could you? You know? And when I was like, oh, that was how I needed to learn that lesson. You know, in hindsight, got it. That was tough, but thank you. I did the work. You knew I would do the work. That's why you gave me that. Got it. And now look what's possible. For example, I learned about psychedelic somatic integration work from the gentleman who pleaded guilty for criminal assault.
Wow.
Right? So my soul knew I needed that level of wake-up call. I needed to be humbled that much. Domestic violence shelter, right? Like all of it, to really go, and a good attitude and one more certification and work your ass off on the weekend and make a difference and all the things that were running, because I was running away from feeling how terrified I was inside my body. And it took that level of being humbled and the universe going, and here's the tool that's going to take you home. So no matter what's happened, when you do this work, you can embody the knowing that everything's for us and nothing's against us. Not like some Pollyanna bumper sticker, but like for realsy. Our soul actually knows what it's doing. And if we can listen and do the work, we're always going to not only get our autonomic nervous system home, we can enjoy the journey of being alive.
What a beautiful note to end this conversation on. Alana, it has been such a pleasure to have you on. And yeah. I am sure listeners want to know where they can find you, how they can work with you, what you're offering right now. So please let us know.
Oh, thank you. So my site is my name, alanapratt.com. Lots of resources on there, lots of complimentary trainings, etc. YouTube, as you said, 5.5 million views, lots of videos there. Just type in what your issue is and a lot should come up. I have my own podcast, Intimate Conversations, lots of great interviews there. I do have something I wanted to give them a discount to if they wanted to take the first very inexpensive step. I have a program, as I said, Become the One, Find the One, Awaken the One. So this is the first one, Become the One. And it's my website, alanapratt.com/become-intro. And it's a $57 three video program. But if you put in the code BTO22, become the one, BTO22, it's only $22. And so that's an inexpensive way to get a taste of the work that I do in a three video series. And then that way you'll be in my world. And we've got an immersion coming up. We have a mastery program coming up. We have our annual retreat in the new year. We have lots of things. And then lastly, if you're like, oh no, I want to talk directly to her. There is on my site, it's called an intimacy breakthrough experience. And that is a way we can have a one-on-one discovery call and just get right down to basics. You'll fill out an application and we will connect and see which of my programs are a fit and get you started on your journey with me and with this beautiful community.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And you have just been such a joy to talk to. Like I said earlier, you are just like lit up talking about all of these, like you're glowing and thank it's just you. Been such a pleasure.
Likewise.
And I love this doing the podcast because I get to speak to inspirational people. So thank you for being one of them.
Thank you.
If you're listening and this resonated with you and there's someone in your life you want to send it to, please share it. Like, comment, share, subscribe, all the things. I will see you all next time. Have a beautiful rest of your day.